Hi, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us for Midday. It's time for another installment of Smart Nutrition here on Midday. Today, a conversation about navigating the twists and turns of holiday party going and holiday party giving. Is there a better way of preparing those partridges in a pear tree than soaking them in lard and serving them with thickly buttered bread? What about the guests we invite to our parties who arrive with a list of food allergies and preferences that's taller than that tree in Rockefeller Center? Is there a way to be both naughty and nice when it comes to nutrition at this time of year? The nutrition diva, Monica Reinagle, joins me to help us sort it all out, along with Andy Thomas, the executive chef at the Elephant Restaurant here in Baltimore. We'll take your calls, comments, and suggestions for good Yuletide eats on this edition of Smart Nutrition. Midday starts right after the news. And welcome to Midday, everybody. Dreaming about it indeed. It's time for another installment of Smart Nutrition here on Midday. I'm Tom Hall. We're going to talk about navigating the twists and turns of holiday party going and holiday party giving. It's all well and good to deck the halls and spread joy to the world, but of course, the trick is to do it without also spreading our waistlines. Is there a way to be both naughty and nice when it comes to nutrition between Thanksgiving and the New Year? Can we go to and give parties without having to abandon most of the clothes in our closet because they no longer fit? Well, I've got two folks with me this afternoon here in Studio A who know more than a little bit about all of this. The nutrition diva, Monica Reinagle, is here. She's an author and a licensed nutritionist who joins us on Midday every month and who blogs at nutritionovereasy.com. Happy holidays, Monica. Good
Hi,
to see
Tom.
You.
Hi, Tom.
And Andy Thomas is here as well. He's the executive chef at the Elephant Restaurant in the historic Mount Vernon neighborhood of Baltimore. Andy, it's good to meet you. Thanks for coming.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And if you've got some great healthy holiday recipes or tips that you'd like to share with us, let us know. We'll take your calls, your comments, your questions this hour. 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org. If you want to drop us a tweet, we're at Midday Tom Hall. And by the way, while you're at Midday Tom Hall, be sure to follow us. So, Monica, this is just a tough time to keep things, you know, restrained and maintained and from going off the rails. It's just a hard time.
It is challenging, but the rumors that you've heard about how we all gain between 5 and 10 pounds between Thanksgiving and New Year's are fortunately not true. The average weight gain is a lot less than that, even though it feels like we're all going off the rails.
Well, once again, I'm above average.
That's right.
Isn't that charming to know?
we grade on a curve, Tom.
Yeah, right.
But it is true, actually, that folks who are a little bit overweight to begin with as they go into the holidays are more likely to gain weight. So there is that. But yeah, it is challenging. You know, we just go from party to party and our routines are disrupted and our exercise routines, such as they are, just get scuttled. And it can really feel when we ring in the new year that we've got a lot of damage to undo. And I'm really interested in finding ways that we can enjoy these holidays and this time with friends and these opportunities to have delicious foods that we don't get to enjoy at other times of the year without going into the new year with a big hangover and a feeling like now we've got to spend the rest of the winter digging out of this hole that we've dug ourselves into.
Yeah. And the thing is, I mean, obviously, if we are invited to parties, you know, from where we work or from our place of worship or, you know, kids' schools or, I mean, there's just so many different places that, you know, potentially have parties, but to say nothing of our friends and family who have us over, you know, on days other than just, you know, Christmas Eve or Christmas Day or New Year's Eve. The weather actually has a lot to do with it, doesn't it? I mean, the fact that it's not the summer, the fact that it's not the spring, that it's a little, although it's in the 60s today, but generally speaking, this time of year, it's a little cooler. I mean, that actually affects weight gain a little bit, doesn't it?
It does. So the winter holidays, when we're doing all this entertaining and extra eating, just so happen to fall during the winter here in the Northern Hemisphere. And that has its own separate effect. And it's not Some of it is the cooler temperatures, because for those of us who enjoy exercising outdoors, that can mean that we get a lot less activity in the wintertime if we're no longer playing tennis. Or for me, I burn a lot of calories gardening, and that just completely goes away now until March. So that's one factor. But there's another issue, and that is the days are shorter, that we have less daylight to work with, and that actually can affect the levels of neurotransmitters in our brain. So it's not just our imagination. We actually are more likely to crave comfort food and starches in particular, because this can be a way to elevate serotonin levels in the brain, that feel-good hormone that otherwise we get from being exposed to daylight. So it's a little bit of a perfect storm.
It is interesting. I mean, so because like you're more inclined to want a meatloaf sandwich in December than you are in June, right? Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Hmm. So Andy Thomas, I mean, you do one of the things that strikes me as one of the hardest things on the planet to do, which is to run a restaurant. You've got a gazillion potential customers, all of whom have, you know, a particular set of experiences, a particular understanding of food, a particular list of likes and dislikes. How do you develop a menu for a public? You know, it's hard enough for us to develop a menu for New Year's Eve dinner with our friends and family. How do you do it for folks you've never met?
I think you start with the things that you like. And you look at those and what time of year it is and what's available, and you start from there. We tend to cook a lot better now, I think, than we have, and know a lot more about what we eat.
Better meaning more nutritious?
More nutritious, where the food comes from, you know, what's in it. We like our whole foods, or hopefully people like whole foods more than processed foods. And in general, I think people eat healthier, so when we developed our menu at the Elephant, we just thought about those things because that's what, you know, that's how we eat. That's what we were doing.
So I've eaten at your restaurant a few weeks ago. We had a lovely time. It was great. I don't remember the menu, you know, verbatim by any means, but do you make a conscious effort to say we're going to have X percent of the offerings are going to be sort of in the comfort food category, X percent of the offerings are going to be higher on the nutritious, you know, and weight conscious scale? I mean, do you divvy up the entrees that you present, you know, in any sort of systematic way like that?
Not necessarily, you know, due to nutritional value. They happen to be nutritious, I think. We have Brussels sprouts on the menu now that we just saute very simply in olive oil and reduce a little orange juice on top of that. That is, you know, there's no butter, there's no cream. We did that because we like the way that tastes. It wasn't necessarily out of that. But again, you know, I tend to cook the things that I want to eat. So that tends to be what, you know, how we do it.
Yeah. And I'd also like to throw a flag on that idea that we have to choose between something that's comforting and appealing and yummy and something that's good for us, because I think that dichotomy is a false one in our heads, and that we don't have to think of, you know, it used to be that you would go into, I think menu development for restaurants has changed a lot over the last 10 or 20 years for a lot of different reasons. The way that we eat at home, the kinds of foods that we value, that we talk about, and also the growing number of people who are following very specific and very divergent dietary regimens. That I know it's a challenge for me as a host in my home when I only have 6 or 8 people coming for dinner. I can't even imagine how Andy does it when he's got, you know, a couple of hundred people coming in with all of those different dietary restrictions. But yeah, this idea that so you used to go into a restaurant 10 years ago and there'd be one or two dishes that had a little heart next to them. And that meant everything here on the menu will kill you. Except these two, this, you know, unseasoned turkey burger on a lettuce leaf, you know. and I think we're doing a much better job of kind of integrating those values. And yeah, there's going to be richer things on the menu and other things that are a little bit more, you know, simply prepared. But I hate the idea that we would kind of have two sides of the menu, one for people who care and one for people who don't. And that's certainly not what I experience at our nice restaurants in Baltimore these days are at the Elephant.
Yeah. I mean, at the Elephant, Andy, I mean, there's also a trend for people to even put the number of calories on any given gift, or the calories that are derived from fat, or, you know, the carbs or something like that.
Sure,
because people
we don't
are so conscious
that.
Of all that.
Yeah, that's, and I'm not
saying
seems
to sort of take
have,
the fun out of ordering.
Absolutely. We have a cauliflower gratin on the menu, and there's cream, and there's cheese in that, and it's wonderful and beautiful, but we don't eat that way all the time. So there's also something about indulging when you come every once in a while, as opposed to, you know, you shouldn't eat that every night, but it is really good to eat.
Yeah, yeah. And that's part of, you know, you wrote a blog about this on nutritionovereasy.com about sort of picking your hot spots and your good things and allowing yourself to enjoy certain things at certain times, but just not overdoing it.
Yeah, I don't think that this is a time to go on a diet. You know, if you can just hold the line through December, I think that you're ahead of the game. I wouldn't pick this time of year to try to be losing 5 or 10 pounds. But I think that another way that we can really help ourselves is by not wasting calories on stuff that's not really worth it. I think sometimes we get into this indulgent frame of mind and we stop exercising a lot of restraint. And then we also stop evaluating, like, do I really like that? So you go into these parties or these, you know, office events, and there may be things there that are not really particular favorites of yours, not really all that yummy, but you're just in that kind of mindset of eating whatever crosses your path. And that, I think, is a real waste, because then you're just, you know, you're adding calories without getting a whole lot of enjoyment. I interviewed a sensory scientist, Annette Hottenstein. She has a podcast. She lives here in Baltimore, too. That's what she studies, sensory science. And she talks a lot about cultivating your inner food snob. You know, that really
get picky.
Look,
yeah.
To get picky and really think about, you know, do I really enjoy those store-bought cookies? Not really. Is it worth it? No, I'm going to hold out for those homemade sugar cookies or butter cookies that mom makes or that I make, you know, that I really love. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. I'm not going to be eating cheap chocolate at this time of year. I'm gonna wait, you know, and then when I do.
And that's the thing, because at this time of year, it's one of the few times of year where the really good stuff is somewhat plentiful and available, at least for certain people in certain socioeconomic stratas, you know.
I mean, all the bad Halloween candy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, there's more of it. It's more accessible now for a lot of folks than it usually is.
But,
yeah.
You know, keeping that in mind, you know, that sort of, is it worth it? Because there are so many opportunities to indulge at this time of year. We can afford to be that much more discriminating. And that can be one of the ways that we can get out of this, you know, without quite so much damage to undo.
So Mindy from Baltimore called. She didn't stick around on the line, but she wanted to note that vitamin D is an important nutrient to supplement during the winter. Is this what you're talking about, like with serotonin and that kind of stuff? I mean, the days keep getting shorter until December 21st, by the last time
and
I checked.
Thank
right?
goodness
and
they
then,
start getting
by
longer.
By a minute a day, they get longer until
June. I know,
June.
But that makes such a difference to me, just knowing that they're getting longer. So when we get less daylight, we do also tend to, our vitamin D levels tend to dip. Mindy's absolutely right, because that's one of the primary ways that we get vitamin D. And there are some interesting associations between vitamin D status and mood. We don't yet know for sure that supplementing with vitamin D will improve mood. So in other words, we see this correlation. We haven't really sorted out whether there's a causal effect there. But there are a lot of other good reasons to keep your vitamin D up. And some people do feel that, you know, that they feel a little lighter and brighter when they do that. But yeah, this is a good time of year to be watching out for your vitamin D status.
And Andy, when you're developing a menu for a sort of, you know, upper crust restaurant like the Elephant, I mean, the Elephant's not inexpensive. It's not over expensive, but it's not inexpensive. You're going out for a special meal there. How aware do you need to be and cognizant of things like gluten allergies or people's reluctance to eat very many carbohydrates, because that's a big part, avoiding carbs is
sure.
a big part of so many diets these days. I mean, when you're designing this, how do you work that into your calculus?
Well, like I said, I make the things that I like, and we actually keep a lot of, not raw ingredients, but prepped ingredients around. So we always have blanched green beans or things that are raw. We make everything to the minute. So when you order something, we then saute it or we bring it to a certain point. So there's lots of things that we have that, yes, maybe I put something in it, garlic, say, that you can't have. We can always leave that out of lots of things. Maybe if it's a vinaigrette we've made ahead of time, no. But a lot of things that we make, we do it right then. So it's very simple to take ingredients and all these things that we have around us to accommodate people.
Right.
You know, you don't always have to just focus on them, but you don't always have to, you know, sacrifice.
Right, and you can accommodate them on the spot, right?
That's right.
But would you say that the number of requests for those kinds of special modifications and substitutions has increased?
Yes, the gluten things I think have. There's always been a low fat, low salt thing. People have always had definite dietary restraints. Older folks have had things, and I've worked in restaurants in Baltimore for a long time, and that the biggest thing I've seen is the gluten. And there's many ways to step around that and to again accommodate people without, you know.
And lots of restaurants will serve you something you're in the mood for, even if it's not specifically on the menu, right? You could say to the restaurant, you know, could I have a piece of salmon, you know, prepared in a certain way?
Absolutely.
Not that Andy's necessarily encouraging you to do that.
Our menu is just a suggestion of ingredients to some folks.
Yeah. All right. It's Smart Nutrition today on Midday with the nutrition diva Monica Reinagle and the executive chef of the Elephant Restaurant here in Baltimore, Andy Thomas. You are welcome to join our conversation. Call us here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Drop us an email, midday@wipr.org, or send us a tweet. Our handle is @MiddayTomHall. We're coming right back at you in about 90 seconds. Stick around. Somehow when I hear that music, I feel like Jackie Gleason. I don't know. I mean, there's certain...
Maybe it's these bubbles floating around.
Yeah, it's the bubbles. And the June Taylor dancers must be in the green room. There are a lot of folks who have no idea who Jackie Gleason is. There are days where I look a lot like Jackie Gleason, too, because I enjoy eating so much. We are talking about nutrition today on this Smart Nutrition segment here on Midday. By the way, looking ahead to tomorrow on the program, we're going to welcome back Dr. Sherry Parks from the University of Maryland for another of our monthly features here on Midday, Culture Connections. We'll talk about diversity in the American electorate in the context in particular of the Trump presidency. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick will review Schoolgirl Figure. That's at the Cohesion Theater Company, and that's all coming up on Midday Thursday. I'm Tom Hall. If you're just joining us today, my guests are Monica Reinagle, the nutrition diva, who blogs at nutritionovereasy.com, and Andy Thomas, who is the executive chef of the Elephant Restaurant in Mount Vernon here in Baltimore. We welcome your questions and comments about healthy eating and healthy entertaining and healthy living in general. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall, our email address, midday@wipr.org, and you are welcome to give us a call and join the broadcast, 410-662-8780. And by the way, before we continue, let's also keep in mind those many, many people here in our city and around our state who don't have the kinds of options that many of us have when it comes to eating, who don't have food security, who don't have friends who are inviting them for holiday parties, and who don't have so many of the blessings that so many of us enjoy. Let's keep them in mind. And when we find out where and who they are, let's make sure we do what we can to take care of those folks. So, Monica, the notion of having a restaurant menu for the general public is one thing, but as you mentioned, you've had some challenges when you've had people over to your house to entertain, as have I and anybody who likes to cook and have friends over. And you've got some tips that you've put on your blog about how you can entertain folks and figure out how to accommodate often very diverse dietary restrictions and needs. So what are some of the tips that come to mind?
Yeah, it starts to sound like a bad joke, you know, a vegan, a low-carb dieter, and a celiac patient walk into your living room and expect to be fed. And this is a challenge that hosts are facing more and more, and it can get really tricky. I think that we live in a slightly more casual time. We're more likely to, when we're invited for dinner, what can I bring? And hosts are comfortable saying, hey, could you bring a salad? Could you bring a dessert? And that opens up the door, I think, for hosts to allow their guests that have special needs to help a little bit. You know, if you're a little uncertain about whether there'll be a side dish or a dessert, for example, that you can offer your guest, you can ask if they'd be willing to bring something that they can eat. And most guests, I think, who have special dietary needs are only too happy to do that. For one thing, it assures them that they will have something that's safe for them to eat. And it's also a nice way for them to introduce people to you know, their style of eating, and people learn a little bit about it. So I think there's nothing wrong with letting people bring something so that everybody can share in that. And I would also advise if you are a guest who has a special dietary need to go ahead and speak up about it. I think a lot of guests, a lot of people hesitate to say, you know, I can't eat this or that because they don't want to be a burden on their host. But I can tell you nothing feels worse than finding out that someone that you've invited to your home is not going to be able to eat what you prepared for them when it's then too late for you to do something about it.
Sure. You know? And it is, I think, a good idea. I know anytime we have people over for dinner, I send an email to everybody. What are your dietary restrictions? What do you like and dislike? And I give them the example of the fact that I hate olives. I love olive oil. So I don't know what's wrong with me, but I can't stand eating a green olive or a black olive. But I cook with olive oil all the time. But I just don't like, if they're on a pizza, I take them off. I mean, I'm that kind of like anti-olive. So I say, there's not going to be any olives in the dinner that I serve you. So if you like olives, you're out of luck. You got to go somewhere else for dinner. But, you know, they're folks are always very good about saying, well, you know, look, it's best if I don't eat this or I have an allergy to that or whatever. But, I mean, again, there are lots of recipes. I mean, the internet is a treasure trove of recipes that you can come up with to try to accommodate folks.
I mean, there's a ton of things out there. There's magazines and food blogs and, you know, again, we know a lot more about our food. You can get mescaline greens at, you know, the Giant now. You can buy sheets of nori and miso at the Safeway. We have such, you know, broader access to things.
Right.
And we know more. And like Monica was saying, when people come to your home, a lot of times they have huge allergies, especially the flour. They always want to bring something because they realize it's not as easy or, well, I made this. I didn't realize that it had flour in it. You know, you think, oh, I will keep the gluten out of it, but you put soy sauce in it. You didn't know. You know?
Right.
We are being more educated.
Yeah. But as you say, the stuff is really accessible. I mean, it's easy to get. You don't have to go
very
to specialty places, you know.
You can get gluten-free pastas anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's a simple fix.
I think a lot of us also have more variety in our repertoire than we realize. Sometimes people feel very intimidated because they've got a vegan coming for dinner, and they're thinking, oh, my gosh, I'm going to have to cook with seitan or tofu or things that I don't normally cook with, and they overlook the recipes that they serve on a weekly basis that just so happen to be vegan. It's not all super exotic outlying things.
Roasted potatoes are brilliant.
And guacamole,
pretty,
you know. Yeah.
Vegan.
Our daughter was working as part of the Jesuit Volunteer Corps in Anchorage, Alaska about 5 years ago, and we went to visit her and we went out to lunch, and at that point she was a vegan vegetarian. And so we get to the restaurant and she orders the special of the day without like six of the things, you know? And so the poor waitress had to, you know, use three pads to write down what she didn't want in her lunch. The other thing about that, when she, and this is a food preference thing that she did not continue more than about a year, is that she ate like eight times a day. She did not have three meals a day because she was never sated with the kinds of foods that she was choosing to eat at that time. But I my wife and I just sort of rolled our eyes and looked at each other and said, you know, this kid is impossible to feed. I mean, it's hard. On the other hand, you know, there are probably now way more options for her or for other folks who choose to be vegan vegetarians than there were even just 4 or 5 years ago.
As Andy mentioned, there are a lot of websites that cater to specific dietary restrictions that you can go to educate yourself or to look up recipes. But one of the things I really appreciate is some of the more mainstream recipe aggregation sites that I rely on, like Epicurious or Food52, will tag their recipes with various tags so you can filter your searches.
Gluten-free, vegan, et cetera.
Uh-huh. Right, and that just can really speed things up. And if you keep things in your recipe box, you can go ahead and, you know, and make notes. And then you're developing your repertoire a little bit.
That's Monica Reinagle. She's the nutrition diva. Andy Thomas is here. He's the executive chef of the Elephant Restaurant. It's Smart Nutrition here on Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Our telephone number, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org. And our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Let's go to the phones. Lynn in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Welcome to Smart Nutrition with Monica Reinagle and Andy Thomas. Thanks for your call.
You're welcome. I am so grateful for this show. It's been so informative. We have about 5 or 6 family members who are gluten allergic, and I wanted to, and gratefulness to Andy, his kindness in saying that if you come to his restaurant, he might alter some of the ingredients for you. And I just wanted to give you both a wonderful compliment for this informative show.
Well, thanks, Lynn. Appreciate the call and have a great holiday. Let's go to Christian in Baltimore. Christian, welcome to Midday.
Hello. I'm calling from Bolton Hill, actually. I had a question and a comment. The comment is that for cranberry sauce, my mom long ago started to try to avoid using the really processed cranberry sauces so common. And her way of getting around it, the sweetness and the sugar content, was to mix in some oranges. So she would just peel orange, usually two oranges, put them in with a bag of cranberries and water. The citric acid would contribute to processing the sugar out of both the oranges and the cranberries. And so then it would be both sweet and with just a little bit of a citrus bite, and it would be quite pleasant. The other question I had was if there is somewhere that we can go or that people who live in areas that are food deserts can go either to have suitable groceries sent to them or have, be made available, or just a grocery store that would be available near those places that would serve good, wholesome food, or you could purchase it.
All right. Well, Christian, thank you for your call. So the first issue of avoiding sugar with these various recipes for cranberry sauce. I mean, Andy, how's that strike you using the citrus and the oranges? That's a nice combination, orange.
I always put orange juice in orange rind. Yeah. There is a lot of sugar. Cranberries are incredibly tart, and it's very hard to make them not. I would say instead of just maybe processed sugar, honey adding to it is a little better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah, I was going to say to Christian, don't peel the oranges. Put the orange peel in there, too. It's a fantastic combination with
good
cranberries.
Roughage and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And the other point that Christian makes about food deserts is a real problem. I mean, this is a problem that I know Stephanie Rawlings-Blake has tried to concentrate on. Martin O'Malley before her and other mayors have really taken an interest, although it's a very tough nut to crack. I've talked to a couple of developers who say that getting a grocery store, and not just the big chains, not Giant and Safeway, but just, you know, Trader Joe's or Mom's Organic or something like that, getting them to anchor strip malls and developments that they're doing is very difficult. They find that there's all sorts of other retailers who are welcome or willing to and sort of, you know, very accommodating when it comes to placing their stores in these properties. But grocery stores are one of the hardest. There are some great local markets here. I mean, do you guys shop at farmers market
some farmers market stuff. We can get things delivered that are from, you know, local companies that bring things from local places. It's very hard to just go to a farmer's market and buy a pint of something when you do 250 covers.
Right, right.
You know, on a Saturday. But the point of the food deserts is a big one and something that I kind of look at all the time. I think that we need to just demand that these places that do sell little things do have whole foods, but we also have to be able to teach people to cook those whole foods. You know, 40, 50 years ago, the poorer folks ate whole foods because that was the cheapest thing. Now the cheapest food is this manufactured food. It's easy to feed your family with this food, but if you look at the ingredients, it's not actually food. It's a lot of other things. Again, we have been educating people. We're better educated at cooking things, but you know, in these food deserts, it's much easier to buy packaged food or McDonald's to feed a family than it is to buy cabbage, potatoes, and beans.
Yeah.
And Andy makes a good point that, you know, in trying to address this this problem of food deserts, of not having fresh food available in large, you know, swaths of the community, that when they've made efforts to bring fresh food into those places and to solve the food desert issue, it's been disappointing that it has not actually translated into different buying and eating patterns in those communities. So just supplying those fresh foods was not the entire solution. We also have some work to do to create desire and demand and competency, you know, around those foods so that folks living in those communities will take advantage of fresh foods if we make it available to them. So it's a little bit more of a complex solution than just
setting it in front of them.
Than putting it in front of them. There is, but I think Christian also
mentioned. But the dangers of processed foods can't be overstated. I mean, they're or not the dangers, perhaps, but the negative impact.
Yeah. You know, there is an increasing number of food delivery services that are available from our big retailer chains now send trucks out and drop stuff off. And also from not local, you know, you can buy fresh and packaged whole foods, you know, and sort of healthier items online now and have them delivered very cost effectively. Again, there needs to be some education involved in getting people to take advantage of those services.
But yeah, we did a segment one time on the morning show about this group called Healthy Harvest.
Yes.
And they're based in Columbia, two kids from the University of Maryland, and they find extra food, I mean, overstocks from local farms, and you can sign up as a subscriber and get a box of fresh vegetables every month sent to your house.
Every week or every other week or something. Very inexpensive, and it's also diverting millions of pounds of fresh produce out of the landfill, which is
right because there's so much food that gets thrown away, and that's the other horrible dichotomy of this, and the irony of this is that we have people who don't have access to good food, and then we have all this great food being disposed of because the farmers can't get it to market.
Right.
They can't get all they grow to market.
Yeah. I was actually just emailing with the Hungry Harvest folks this morning, and we should suggest to them that they make as a priority moving more distribution into those neighborhoods that may not have as good access to.
Of course, there are a lot of great specialty shops and specialty stores. I think of Trinacria, a great place to go for Italian food. There's a halal market that's right down the street here from WYPR on Charles Street and 21st, I think. There's great Asian markets over on the west side, Edmonton Avenue. I mean, so there are places you can go to get specific things and specific cuisines. Do you make it a point, Andy, in your cooking to involve, to have a lot of geographic diversity when it comes to the influences, the ethnic
Absolutely.
Influences?
Absolutely. At the Elephant, we've tried to bring influences from all over. We are people from all over. All of our influences come from different. We could look around at this table and everybody would have some different thing that their parents made or that, you know, so we try to bring lots of influences using spices from India, cooking techniques from Northern Africa. If you look at it, you know, we could call it lots of different cuisines, but they're all very similar. Every culture has a clay pot cooking device. Every culture has a flatbread. Every culture has a fried dough thing. You know, if you're near the water, those cultures have dried fish and fresh fish things. If you're inland, everybody has some sort of meat or dairy. You know, it's all very common. You look across the threads. We're not that different.
Let's go to the phones before we take a quick break. Michael in Charles Village, thanks for calling Midday at Smart Nutrition with Monica Reinagle and Andy Thomas. Michael, you with us? Michael has disappeared, but Michael says that he's a vegetarian and he's working on advising restaurants of how to add vegetable proteins to their menus. That's what he was going to talk about. As unfortunately, we lost the connection there. But I mean, vegetable proteins, is that something that is top of mind when you're cooking and devising recipes?
Again, no. I think about the things that I like, and I guess if they happen to have the vegetable proteins,
all
but
the
if
better.
You look at a very well-rounded, you know, meal or menu, you can go through and choose these things that you might need. And again, when you're coming to the Elephant, you're coming out to have a good time. If you have dietary needs, certainly, but you're not always just going to think, how am I going to get my vegetable protein in on this meal that I'm having right this instant?
Michael, you have magically reappeared. How you doing? Can you hear us? Nope. Now I'm told you have disappeared one more time. The ever elusive Michael from Charles Village. But we will come back after a break and talk to other folks. Perhaps Michael can give us a call back and we will be able to catch up with you then. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Smart Nutrition here on this edition of Midday. Andy Thomas is the executive chef at The Elephant. It's a restaurant in the Mount Vernon neighborhood of Baltimore. Monica Reinagle is the nutrition diva. She's a licensed nutritionist who blogs at nutritionovereasy.com. If you go to her website, you can sign up for Monica's newsletter and get her nutrition news and tips by email. You can also give us a call and talk to Monica today, and you can send us a tweet, drop us an email, 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle @MiddayTomHall. Stay with us. We'll be back in a flash.
doing? What? Did you just double dip that chip?
Excuse me?
You double dipped the chip.
Double dipped? What are you talking about?
You dipped the chip. You took a bite. And you dipped again.
So?
That's like putting your whole mouth right in the dip. From now on, when you take a chip, just take one dip and end it.
Well, I'm sorry, Timmy. But I don't dip that way.
Oh, you don't, huh?
No. You dip the way you want to dip, I'll dip the way I want to dip.
Give me the chip!
Hey!
Give me the chip!
Just take one dip and end it. It's Smart Nutrition here on Midday. That's, of course, one of the iconic famous scenes from the Seinfeld show of yesteryear. The nutrition diva Monica Reinagle joins me in the studio along with Andy Thomas of the Elephant Restaurant. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org. And our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Because I'm a person of great faith and eternal optimism, I'm going to try one more time for the ever elusive Michael in Charles Village. Michael, can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
I can. We have Michael. Houston, we no longer have a problem. Michael, welcome to Midday. It took us a while, but we got you here. I'm glad you called.
All right. Well, I'm loving this topic. I've been vegetarian for 36 years. And, of course, back then when I started, it was really hard to eat out anywhere. I learned very quickly to go to a restaurant, peruse the menu, and ask for what I want. And while you and your wife are rolling your eyes, that was me that you were rolling your eyes at, because I had to survive that way, to eat socially, go out to eat. As a result, I now am attempting to reach out to restaurants to provide consultation to figure out how to put plant protein-based items on their menu, at least one or two, so that when, you know, my meat-eating friends invite me out, there are a couple of options on the menu for me.
And what so, things do you recommend when it comes to, particularly to protein in vegetables? What do you like to
well,
suggest?
Interestingly enough, I realize that most people don't understand where protein comes from, and plant-based protein in particular. Beans are a huge source for protein. Let's just stay there. There are a plethora of varietals on beans, legumes. And so I look on their menu, and if they have black beans or pinto beans or lentils on their menu, I'll ask, you know, have they been cooked with pork or chicken or whatever? And if they have not, then I can begin to, you know, to make a dish with that protein on the dish, because invariably, they do have salad, they do have vegetables, but the plant protein is usually what's missing.
Well, Michael, thank you for that call. I appreciate it, and I appreciate your tenacity while we figured out how to get you connected to the listeners. So, Monica, what are some other sources of protein from vegetables?
Well, Michael's correct that legumes and pulses, lentils, they're going to be the most concentrated sources of plant-based protein. And in particular, soybeans are a very complete source of protein and very concentrated source of protein. And there are a lot of ingredients that are soy-based that restaurants can turn to create plant protein-based meals. Tofu is the one that most people are familiar with. Tempeh is another one that is fermented. There's a fermented wheat protein product called seitan, which is another. And these are, especially tempeh and seitan, maybe some people think it's an acquired taste, but they've got a lot of texture to them as well. You know, they've got sort of a chewiness to it. And
I'll admit, I've never heard seitan. What is that?
As I said, it's a fermented wheat protein, so no good for somebody who's avoiding gluten. Uh-huh. It is a gluten-based product, but it's a staple in the.
So cupboard. It would replace like what?
Chicken.
Okay.
Beef,
so it's
seafood.
Like a main
it's a textured thing that takes on any any flavor that you give it, really. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. kind of mm-hmm. bland in a way.
And for, you know, a lot of restaurateurs will put portobello mushrooms on as the alternative for meat. And I love portobello mushrooms, but they have virtually no protein in them. They're also mm-hmm. very low in calories, so you tend to be hungry. You know,
yeah, I grill those during the summer.
Yeah, delicious.
And eat them as an entree because, I mean, they're so big. They feel right. like you're having a piece of chicken or a piece of steak or something. Yeah.
Right, very satisfying, but not necessarily. And it's not that you have to have, you know, a high protein thing at every single meal. But I think vegetarians do get tired sometimes of going into restaurants and looking and seeing really only salads without the protein on them or, mm-hmm. you know, a mushroom burger or something is their only alternative. And fortunately, that is becoming less and less the case. I feel like our restaurant chefs are doing a much better job. And as I was telling you both while we were off air during the break, I'm not a full-time vegetarian, but I order the vegetarian entrees in restaurants about 80% of the time because I want to see what they've got. Yeah. I want to see what they've managed to come up with because it's more interesting to me.
And Andy, one of your challenges has got to be serving vegetarian meals at this time of year when the stuff isn't growing. I mean, do you do stock up? Do you buy fresh stuff and flash freeze it or something? I mean, how do you deal with serving local vegetables, you know, between the months of December and March?
It's really hard. Some people are way better at it than others, but you can get onions and potatoes and beans are all dried. Root vegetables still grow. We can still get greens throughout the year here. There's a ton of things. It does tend to go a little more of the starchy things, but thinking about beans and things is fun to put yourself out there and try to do that. You know, that's a challenge to come up with these things that, again, it's not just the vegetarian thing. That sounds pretty good. I'd love to have this chickpea potato heavily spiced, you know, thing wrapped in a crepe. That's mm-hmm. perfect.
I'd order that.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm with you, Monica. I often get the vegetarian entree. Not that I'm opposed to meat or fish by any means, but it is fun to see how people, how inventive people can be with those vegetarian recipes.
Right, but Michael's absolutely right. We want to make sure that those vegetarian options on restaurant menus, whether they're being ordered by omnivores or vegetarians, also constitute balanced meals, you know, and are not just the meat-eating meals minus the meat.
Lauren from Pikesville. Welcome to Midday with Monica Reinagle and Andy Thomas. Glad you called.
Thank you. First, Andy, I've dined at the Elephant, and it's wonderful. It's great what you guys are doing there. That duck appetizer is amazing.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
My comment was there was a previous caller who had talked about food deserts and families relying on fast food, and I think that's certainly a problem. A while back, we used to teach culinary arts in high schools, and I think young people just aren't learning how to cook in the first place. And just creates a cycle. I just wonder if you could comment on increasing culinary education for children. I'm going to take my question off the air. Thanks.
Good. Thanks for your call, Lauren.
I agree totally. We don't even cook at home, you know, with our kids a lot anymore. I always did with my kids, but that's because we are a family that cooks. There's a lot of people, you know, you run late, you get home. What are we going to make? It's easy to take ground beef and some taco mix and, you know, everybody loves it. So you have to really plan those things out. And we should be teaching these things, not just like home ec sorts of things, but shop class and all these things that we took out of middle schools a long time ago. We've found that these things help us, but definitely cooking. If you know a few things, you should be able to feed yourself and not just to make ramen or open a can or spaghetti. You should be able to have some simple things that you can apply that are quick. Crockpots are great things.
They are. And pressure cookers are enjoying a real yes. resurgence now because unlike crockpots, they're super fast. But somebody still has to show you how to use
That's
it.
Right.
And I'm fascinated by the rise of these meal kit services. There's half a dozen companies now that are making a go of it. And I don't know if you've seen these, Tom or Andy, but essentially you get a box that comes to your doorstep. It has all the ingredients. It
right.
has a little recipe card. And they've thought out a simple recipe that anybody could make in 30 minutes.
It's the whole if you can read, you can cook.
Right. And I've tried
thought,
a few
right.
of mm-hmm. these services. And I mean, I know how to cook and I do cook, but just to kind of see what they were like. And I was really impressed with what a nice meal you had. And I think, ironically, some of the, I hate to pick on the poor millennials one more time, but they're the generation that grew up not knowing how to cook. And they are learning to cook through these services. And I feel like, well, okay, that's better than nothing.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to stuff like spaghetti, one thing you can do is make pesto sauce in advance. I mean, I grow basil on the back deck of my house, and I make tons of pesto. I put it in ice cube trays, and I freeze it. and then I pop them out. And so I have a serving of pesto, which is the size of an ice cube, and I can use one or two or three depending on what I'm making. And you have, you know, healthy, fresh, basil-based pesto that you can put on chicken, you can put on salmon, you could put on some pasta and stuff. When it comes to proteins and vegetables, one of the things that folks think they get a lot of protein from, Monica, is quinoa. Is that true? Is that one of those nutrition myths?
It's a little bit of a myth. So quinoa is slightly higher in protein than other similar grains like wheat or rice. And it does have a slightly more complementary profile of proteins, the mix of amino acids. It's a little bit more complete and a little bit more balanced. But the difference is not, it's not like it's twice as high or three times as high in protein as other grains. It's like 15% higher. So quinoa is great. You know, it's a lot of fun. We're all enjoying cooking with it. But it doesn't like single-handedly solve the protein problem for vegetarians or anyone else. It's just on the high end of the grains in terms of its protein content.
We have an email from Michael. This is Michael Evitz, who is the VP of Communications at the Downtown Partnership, which is a great organization here in Baltimore. And he's got a great question. He says, I'm fascinated by where chefs go and what they eat in their spare time. How do local chefs celebrate the holidays when they often have to work while the rest of us are enjoying our friends and family? So, Andy, you got to give us secrets of executive chefs.
I believe it or not, I'm one of those folks who likes to cook. We cook at home a lot. My wife likes to cook. So I worked on Thanksgiving Day, and it was a long day. It was a great day. It was a long day. And the next day I got up and we cooked a turkey and made stuffing, and we had Thanksgiving meal at home.
Do you invite other chefs over for dinner? Do you all cook for each other on your nights off?
No.
No, I think that would be fun.
You're not hanging out with those people.
Not
yeah.
that I wouldn't. But, you know, it's a lot of fun. Sometimes, you know, we get off very late at night and there's very little choice to eat. Often we go to late night Korean barbecues, which, you know, they have their own good, healthy food. You can walk out of those places and feel like you had one of the best meals ever, and it's 2 a.m.
Can you recommend one at 2 o'clock in the morning, a Korean barbecue place?
My favorite is Nam Kang.
Mm-hmm. And where's that?
It's 23rd in Maryland.
Yeah, so it's right around the corner from here. Yeah. I think I've been there for lunch. But
Next time we're up at 1 a.m, Tom, let's remember to
call me.
Right. Well, that'll only be because my furnace is broken if I'm up at 2 o'clock in the morning, generally speaking. You know, one of the things that you recommended in your blog, Monica, and this is a really good idea. Sometimes if you're having like house guests and they have food, you know, preferences that are important to them, you can just sort of write into the itinerary that you're going to go shopping with them and just, you know, go shopping with them and have them pick out the stuff that they like. Then you can stock the fridge with that stuff.
Yeah. When you have people staying in your house and all of a sudden you're kind of responsible for breakfast, lunch and dinner, that can get overwhelming. And this is just a defensive maneuver. And again, sometimes people are really relieved to have an opportunity. You would be surprised how many people with dietary preferences travel with stash in their suitcases, and they don't want to bring it out, but it's there in case they didn't get enough to eat and they couldn't. You know, they couldn't get their needs met. They've got their little supply that they can eat in the privacy of their own room. So it's just a way to kind of bring that out of the closet. But yeah, go shopping together, and then they can make sure that they can pick up the dairy-free yogurt or the gluten-free bread or pasta, whatever it is that they need to feel comfortable. That makes everybody feel a little more relaxed.
So, Andy, quickly before we go, our producer, Rob Civek, wants to know that they say you should also never trust a skinny chef. You are not overweight.
Suspiciously,
so
yes,
how do you do
true.
That? What's your secret?
I work 12 hours a day all the time. And
that'll do it. There you go.
Run up and down stairs.
All right. Monica Reinagel is the nutrition diva and a regular contributor to Midday. Monica, good to see you. Thank you so much. Happy
Thanks,
holidays.
Tom.
We've got a link to Monica's blog, Nutrition Over Easy, at our website. You can sign up for Monica's newsletter and get her nutrition news and tips by email. Come on over to WIPR.org/midday for a link. Andy Thomas is the executive chef at The Elephant, a restaurant at the site of what used to be the Brass Elephant on Charles Street in Mount Vernon. Andy, it's been great to meet you. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
And that'll do it for us today. Tomorrow, it's Culture Connections with Dr. Sherry Parks from the University of Maryland. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick has her weekly theater review. That's all coming up on Midday Thursday. Lunch for our guests on Wednesday here at Midday is provided by Dangerously Delicious Pies. They've got locations at 2839 O'Donnell Street on the Square in Canton and at 810 West 36th Street in Hamden. Their menus include a large variety of homemade sweet and savory pies and quiches. Thanks for listening. Thanks to everybody who called and emailed and tweeted today. We'll be back tomorrow at noon. Stay tuned for Here and Now, which is on the way right after a break for the news at the top of the hour. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great day.